Live. Catch the podcast on kaya959.co.za.
Thank you so much for being with us. My name is Phemelo Modene. This is Point of View. Always lovely to have you on the show and would absolutely love to hear your point of view on 086-000-00959. As you know, you can also send those voice notes on 063-688-0959. So you know it's a Monday, and generally on a Monday we have our car feature. So that's what we're going to be doing. Just get your questions ready now, okay? Just start planning for if you've got a cough and a screech of sorts in your car. Bukhiso is just the right person. And you know, the thing about Bukhiso is that he knows himself how to work a car. So this is not someone who just test drives cars. And you know those people who just test drive cars and tells you what a nice car this is, and it's got this what torque, whatever torque. This is someone who this is Mudibedi is laughing, our technical producer. This is someone who literally knows the belly of a car, the belly of a car whenever there's a problem. So if you have a problem, you know, you can get a diagnosis over the radio. Just call us. Just send us a voice note, send us a text, whatever. And let's see if he cannot help you, because I'm sure some of you have been taking the car in and you've been paying lots of money and you're not getting to the bottom of what's wrong with your car. Sometimes someone who's not asking you to pay them may be the better advisor for whatever problem you have. That's what we're going to be discussing just after 9 o'clock. But, you know, you and I have been talking about extortion syndicates. Last week, you and I, we spoke about extortion syndicates, and I cannot believe the story. We were told that a principal was killed in front of teachers and school students because I don't even know what it is that they were looking for. But this is just something that is absolutely disturbing. The Minister of Basic Education, Siviwe Harube, has been on, she's actually started a nationwide campaign of just trying to understand what's actually happening on the ground. This is her first stop in Gqeberha. But to start here, I think, is absolutely heartbreaking. Siviwe, thank you so much for making time for us. Good evening and welcome, Minister.
Good evening, Pamela, and good evening to KFM listeners.
What we're hearing about what happened at Zakhele Primary School, absolutely shocking. What information have you been able to gather so far?
Pamela, it is absolutely shocking. And and of course, as I indicated to the Eastern Cape colleagues when I met with them today, that, you know, what we are dealing with here is that schools become a microcosm of the communities they exist in. And so, you know, the kind of extortion and the kind of organized crime we are seeing taking root in our country is now finding itself very much in schools. And schools are meant to be a place of safety, a place of learning. And my big concern here is that while we might be fighting a crime crisis, we will soon find ourselves in a scenario where educators don't want to take on the role of being educators because of the inherent unsafe environment in which they work. And, you know, the 500,000 of them who are in the system need to know that, you know, at the end of the day, we are doing everything in our power to try and protect them. So what we do know about what has happened in that school really is still sketchy at this point, except that the principal was tragically shot at the school because apparently the robber or the person or the perpetrator was wanting a protection fee of some kind, which is unclear, you know, what, you know, whether or not it was a protection fee that the principal ought to have paid for the school, or what the situation was. And he then shot him and dead in the school and got away. I mean, this is that case, and obviously I'm here in Gqeberha this today. And we're hearing, you know, I visited a school today in Motherwell where the deputy principal was telling me how he at gunpoint was robbed at the school while he was leaving the school after a lesson. I mean, and the list goes on. I mean, several weeks ago, we heard of this the teacher who was shot at her school in KwaZulu-Natal. And so, really, Pamela, this for me paints a crisis, because it's not something that's just limited to the Eastern Cape. It's happened in KZN. It's happened in other parts of the country. Of course, we've always known about the gang violence in the Western Cape and the impact that has in schools. And so really, the point is we have to make sure that we are talking to my colleagues in the cabinet to say, well, the justice cluster has to find ways and means to put an end to this. Otherwise, we are now seeing it affecting our schools. And with 49 days to go before matric exams start, I am deeply worried that this is going to have an impact on how we're able to perform.
Absolutely concerning. So obviously you are there to also establish other things, and one of the things that's come up in that province is the absolute need for scholar transport with no budget. So these are students who do not have their families don't have the money. The MEC says they too don't have the money. Really a tight rope here that you are walking, because your department really is quite lean at the moment, and it's quite difficult.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the MEC, yes. So as I've undertaken the visits around, I started with the Eastern Cape, and I'm going to be going, I think the next stop is in Mpumalanga. Mm. And of course, one of the things that I want to do is firstly understand the system, not just from what I've read from presentations and from briefings from the department, but to see for myself, which is very, very important. But the NEC, particularly on scholar transport, indicated to me that in the Eastern Cape there are 40,000 learners who ought to have access to scholar transport who do not. And that is a function of either schools have been closed in one area, but there are no roads for transport to even have access to some of the deep rural areas. That is a function of affordability. That's a function of those two things mostly: the rural terrain where they can't get service providers there, and affordability. And so it really makes you have a deeper appreciation when you're on the ground of some of the issues. And one of the things that is obviously of very topical at the moment is the basket of posts that each provincial department is preparing for 2025. The Western Cape has come out to say that they're not going to be able to fill over 2,000 posts with the current equitable share that they've been allocated. And we know that this problem persists in other provinces. And one of the things that we are doing is I've convened a special meeting with Treasury in order for us to make a case to Treasury to say, look, I mean, this is a result of political and policy decisions that have been made over years to fund certain things over certain things. And now we're in a scenario where frontline services are literally taking a cut, where you are not able to employ more teachers or nurses or doctors or police women and men. And those are frontline services that you cannot do without. So the case we're going to make to Treasury is a simple one. But, well, we have to find the money somewhere. If we're talking about austerity, we have to find the money somewhere, because already overcrowding is a problem in South Africa. And I cannot expect a teacher to be teaching a classroom of 50 learners and still expect literacy rates to go up. And still expect metric results to continue to climb. So these are the complexities and the tightrope we have to walk, but walk it we must, because 13.5 million learners expect that from us.
And, you know, you've just said, obviously, you need to go and talk to Treasury and see, you know, what can be done, because we just cannot lose more teachers. We need these teachers. But you do have some provinces that are unable to spend some of the money that they have, which then goes back to Treasury. And that makes it quite difficult to then have that conversation.
Absolutely. And when I convened the Council for Education Ministers about 2 weeks ago, I made it clear to the MECs that not a single one of the provincial departments should be sending money back to Treasury for under expenditure. And in fact, one of the things that I was really looking at here in this province, while I'm still here in the Eastern Cape, was to look at the infrastructure backlog that the province has versus what they have spent. And I'm quite pleased to see now that the province is spending the entire infrastructure budget and they're making some inroads in, you know, eradicating mud schools and pit latrines. But, you know, that has to be the attitude. If provinces are not able to spend grants that we give them and they are sending those back to Treasury, we have to get those grants back. And according to the law, there is provision for you to reallocate that money to provinces that will work. Because we can't be sending money back when we need it so desperately. And of course, the other problem, Pamela, is that, and also provinces have to spend, you know, the education budgets, at least the equitable share that they get responsibly, because that comes from the equitable share that the province gets. And, you know, you can't have a scenario where we're spending 90% of your budget on salaries and you can't even pay service providers. So, that, you know, when you make that case to Treasury, Treasury is going to come back and point to some of the anomalies in the books and say, well, you're managing this badly. But the point I'm making is that, I mean, it's the point I'm going to make to Minister Kodongwana is a moral one. But, you know, we have to save our teachers somehow.
Just based on what the Auditor General was saying the other day, could it also be that maybe, just maybe, some of these administrators are not capacitated to know actually how to administer this money? Is that maybe part of the problem?
It very well could be. I mean, you know, there are provinces that are in dire financial strength, not because they don't have access to money, but because money is being spent badly. As I made an example of, you know, a certain province could be spending 95% of its budget on salaries. But I mean, that's a problem because, you know, what about goods and services? What about service providers, scholar transport? We've had instances, you know, the AG is only coming to brief us in the coming 2 weeks about the audit outcomes of the various departments in the provinces, including DBE. But there have been instances in past years where provinces have also tried to even take conditional grants to spend it elsewhere. And so fiscal discipline has to accompany the case that we make to Treasury. Otherwise, Treasury is going to say, well, I'm afraid you're not, you know, handling your money well, and therefore, why must we make provision? And of course, we have to take from somewhere else. We have to top slice elsewhere to make provision for this. So in as much as we will make the case, the provinces, too, have to prove that this has been due to consistent underfunding of the sector over the past couple of years and not because of misuse of public money.
Just to make the point, I wasn't saying she had said that about your department and the provincial spend. I was just making an example.
Yes. No, I understand.
So you know, you're at a province that unfortunately has been on many, many studies. Food security being an issue, unemployment isn't an issue. We've just spoken about scholar transport. Families just don't have the money, and you have the need is so great. I know that you've had to suspend the feeding scheme for administrative reasons, and I think that's a process that we'll have to wait for. But what are you seeing on the ground in terms of hunger and its implication on how the learners are coping at school? You know, as you said, this is obviously a microcosm of what's happening in society, the school's environment.
So I do want to assure people that the process that I've halted is the migration from the current system that we have of the nutrition program to a new one, because I'm still studying its efficacy and whether or not we can keep the numbers of feeding 9.7 million learners. But I must say, Pamela, one of the things that I really enjoy about not being in an office and being on the ground, as heartbreaking as it can be, it is also one of the things that really can energize you and really instill hope. You know, I visited a school called Kaisa today in Mabalo. That school has been getting 100% pass rate for the past couple of years. And, you know, this is a school that is in a crime-ridden area. You can see they've really tried hard. They've really tried hard to secure the place. They've had private-public partnerships. But, I mean, here is a principal who blows my mind from just how he talks about his job, how he leads his team. And you realize, goodness, there are centers of excellence in this country that sometimes they are buried by just the heaviness and the extent of our problems that we sometimes don't see or don't talk about just really like some of these dedicated educators who are doing entirely the most in really difficult circumstances. So it's been, what I've been seeing is that, you know, there are things that are desperately needed, and the trimming of the fat has now finally caught up with us. We are now at a point where in the system we are cutting into the bone. And if we're going to be talking about austerity measures as a country, we must ask ourselves, what are those austerity measures? That we can't be hanging on to vanity projects. We can't be hanging on to projects that don't have any efficiency, because that's how things have always been done. Now we have to really prioritize, literally, food, teachers, infrastructure and schools over certain things. And so, but, you know, and then, so one of the things I've seen is obviously the financial difficulty of the province. But I'm also really inspired by how the Eastern Cape is slowly turning the tide around, particularly when it comes to education outcomes. When you will remember, they started off at 40%, 46% pass rate, and they are now sitting at just over 80%. And you can see the dedication from the teachers, and they have a healthy competition amongst them about how they want to up each other. And it's inspiring, man. And I, you know, it made me realize why we need to do what we need to do, and why we need to fight for frontline services.
That's very interesting, because with all the challenges we've just speaking about now, and you're saying there seems to be this healthy competition, they really want to succeed. Well, what do you think where does that come from? Do they, you know, were you able to get some nuggets on the ground?
I think it's really just like we've got some really top-notch leaders in our schools. The principal I met today, one of them, as I said, was in the room telling me about how he was held at gunpoint a couple of weeks ago, but he's at the school, you know, he was like, "Minister, I can only come and talk to you for 5 minutes. I'm going back to the class." So it's the dedication, and for me, that makes me really want to say, look, you know, at a policy level, we've got to show up for people like this. At a governance level, we've got to support people like this. Because on the ground, people see that, you know, really literacy and having these kids do well in school and having enough kids do STEM subjects is the only way we're going to unlock poverty and make sure that we've got poor black kids really accessing proper economic opportunities of the future. And you've got people who get that and who are dedicated to being part of the solution. So I don't want us to lose those kind of people. There are way too many people who are not fit for purpose in the public service, but there are equally as many people who want to do the job. And so at least the least we can do as politicians is do our job well enough so that at the very least the people in the public service who want to work are motivated to do more.
Basic Education Minister, I really appreciate your time, Sibuya Khawarube, who is on a national roadshow. Hopefully, when she is in Gauteng, we'll have her in studio and touch on many of the issues that you have here in Gauteng. But thank you very much, Minister. Really appreciate your time.
If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.